to the edge of the spring court that night, then went the rest of the way on foot to the manor. I slew Tamlin's brothers on sight. I held their minds and rendered them helpless while I cut them into pieces, then melted their brains inside their skulls. And when I got to the High Lord's bedroom, he was dead. And my father had killed Tamlin's mother as well. I couldn't stop shaking my head. My father had promised not to touch her, that we weren't the kind of males who would do that. But he lied to me, and he did it anyway. And then he went for Tamlin's room. I couldn't breathe. Couldn't breathe, as Rhys said. I tried to stop him. He didn't listen. He was going to kill him, too. And I couldn't. After all the death, I was done. I didn't care that Tamlin had been there, had allowed them to kill my mother and sister, that he'd come to kill me because he didn't want to risk standing against them. I was done with death. So I stopped my father before the door. He tried to go through me. Tamlin opened the door, saw us, smelled the blood already leaking into the hallway. And I didn't even get to say a word before Tamlin killed my father in one blow. I felt the power shift to me, even as I saw it shift to him. And we just looked at each other, as we were both suddenly crowned High Lord. And then I ran. He'd murdered Rhysand's family, the High Lord I'd loved. He'd murdered his friend's family. And when I'd asked him how his family died, he'd merely told me a rival court had done it. Rhysand had done it, and...
He didn't tell you any of that.
I'm sorry, I breathed, my voice hoarse.
What do you possibly have to be sorry for?
I didn't know. I didn't know that he'd done that. And Rhys thought I'd been comparing him against Tamlin, as if I held him to be some paragon.
Why did you stop? He said, motioning to the ice shards on the pine needle carpet.
The people he'd loved most, gone. Slaughtered in cold blood. Slaughtered by Tamlin. The clearing exploded in flame. The pine needles vanished, the trees groaned, and even Rhys swore as fire swept through the clearing, my heart, and devoured everything in its path. No wonder he'd made Tamlin beg that day I'd been formally introduced to him. No wonder he'd relished every chance to taunt Tamlin. Maybe my presence here was just too... No. I knew that wasn't true. I knew my being here had nothing to do with what was between him and Tamlin, though he no doubt enjoyed interrupting our wedding day. Saved me from that wedding day, actually.
Feyre,
Rhys said as the fire died. But there it was, crackling inside my veins, crackling beside veins of ice and water and darkness. Embers flared around us, floating in the air, and I sent out a breath of soothing dark, a breath of ice and water, as if it were a wind at dawn, sweeping clean the world. The power did not belong to the High Lords, not any longer. It belonged to me, as I belonged only to me, as my future was mine to decide, to forge. Once I discovered and mastered what the others had given me, I could weave them together into something new, something of every court, and none of them. Flame hissed as it was extinguished so thoroughly that no smoke remained. But I met Rhys's stare, his eyes a bit wide as he watched me work. I rasped, "Why didn't you tell me sooner?" The sight of him in his Illyrian fighting gear, wings spread across the entire width of the clearing, his blade peeking over his shoulder. There, in that hole in my chest, I saw the image there. At first interpretation, he looked terrifying, vengeance and wrath incarnate,
but if you came closer... The painting would show the beauty on his face. The wings flared not to hurt, but to carry me from danger, to shield me.
I didn't want you to think I was trying to turn you against him, he said.
The painting, I could see it, feel it. I wanted to paint it. I wanted to paint. I didn't wait for him to stretch out his hand before I went to him. And looking up into his face, I said, I want to paint you. He gently lifted me into his arms.
Nude would be best, he said in my ear.
Chapter 46. I was so cold, I might never be warm again. Even during winter in the mortal realm, I'd managed to find some kernel of heat, but after nearly emptying my cache of magic that afternoon, even the roaring hearth fire couldn't thaw the chill around my bones. Did spring ever come to this blasted place?
They pick these locations, Cassian said across from me as we dined on mutton stew around the table tucked into the corner of the front of the stone house. Just to ensure the strongest among us survive.
Horrible people, Moore grumbled into her earthenware bowl. I don't blame Az for never wanting to come here.
I take it training the girls went well? Rhys drawled from beside me, his thigh so close its warmth brushed my own.
Cassian drained his mug of ale.
I got one of them to confess they hadn't received a lesson in 10 days. They'd all been too busy with chores, apparently. No born fighters in this lot?
3, actually, Moore said. 3 out of 10 isn't bad at all. The others, I'd be happy if they just learned to defend themselves, but those 3, they've got the instinct, the claws. It's their stupid families that want them clipped and breeding. I rose from the table, taking my bowl to the sink tucked into the wall. The house was simple, but still bigger and in better condition than our old cottage. The front room served as kitchen, living area, and dining room, with 3 doors in the back. One for the cramped bathing room, one for the storage room, and one being a back door, because no true Illyrian, according to Rhys, ever made a home with only 1 exit.
When do you head for the Hewn City tomorrow? Cassian said to her, quietly enough that I knew it was probably time to head upstairs.
Moore scraped the bottom of her bowl. Apparently Cassian had made the stew. It hadn't been half bad. After breakfast? Before? I don't know. Maybe in the afternoon when they're all just waking up. Rhys was a step behind me, bowl in hand, and motioned to leave my dirty dish in the sink. He inclined his head toward the steep, narrow stairs at the back of the house. They were wide enough to fit only 1 Illyrian warrior, another safety measure, and I glanced at the table 1 last time before disappearing upstairs. Moore and Cassian both stared at their empty bowls of food, softly talking for once. Every step upward, I could feel Rhys at my back, the heat of him, the ebb and flow of his power. And in this small space, the scent of him washed over me, beckoned to me. Upstairs was dark, illuminated by the small window at the end of the hall, and the moonlight streaming in through a thin gap in the pines around us. There were only 2 doors up here, and Rhys pointed to one of them.
You and Moore can share tonight. Just tell her to shut up if she babbles too much.
I wouldn't, though. If she needed to talk, to distract herself and be ready for what was to come tomorrow, I'd listen until dawn. He put a hand on his own doorknob, but I leaned against the wood of my door. It'd be so easy to take the 3 steps to cross the hall. To run my hands over that chest, trace those beautiful lips with my own. I swallowed as he turned to me. I didn't want to think what it meant, what I was doing, what this was, whatever it was, between us. because things between us had never been normal. Not from the very first moment we'd met on Kalanmai. I'd been unable to easily walk away from him then, when I'd thought he was deadly, dangerous. But now? Traitor, traitor, traitor. He opened his mouth, but I had already slipped inside my room and shut the door. Freezing rain trickled through the pine boughs as I stalked through the mists in my Illyrian fighting leathers, armed with a bow, quiver, and knives, shivering like a wet dog. Rhys was a few hundred feet behind, carrying our packs. We'd flown deep into the forest steppes, far enough that we'd have to spend the night out here. Far enough that no one and nothing might see another glorious explosion of flame and temper, as Rhys had put it. Asriel hadn't brought word from my sisters of the Queen's status, so we had time to spare. Though Rhys certainly hadn't looked like it when he informed me that morning. But at least we wouldn't have to camp out here. Rhys had promised there was some sort of wayfarer's inn nearby. I turned toward where Rhys trailed behind me, spotting his massive wings first. Moore had set off before I'd even been awake, and Cassian had been pissy and on edge during breakfast. So much so that I'd been glad to leave as soon as I'd finished my porridge, and felt slightly bad for the Illyrians who had to deal with him that day. Rhys paused once he caught up, and even with the trees and rain between us, I could see his brows lift in silent question of why I'd paused. We hadn't spoken of Starfall or the Court of Nightmares, and last night, as I twisted and turned in the tiny bed, I'd decided. Fun and distraction. It didn't need to be complicated. Keeping things purely physical, well, it didn't feel like as much of a betrayal. I lifted a hand, signaling Rhys to stay where he was. After yesterday, I didn't want him too close, lest I burn him, or worse. He sketched a dramatic bow, and I rolled my eyes as I stalked to the stream ahead, contemplating where I might indeed try to play with Baron's fire. My fire. Every step away, I could feel Rhys's stare devouring me. Or maybe that was through the bond, brushing against my mental shields. Flashes of hunger so insatiable that it was an effort to focus on the task ahead and not the feeling of what his hands had been like, stroking my thighs, pushing me against him. I could have sworn I felt a trickle of amusement on the other side of my mental shield, too. I hissed and made a vulgar gesture over my shoulder, even as I let my shield drop, just a bit. That amusement turned into full delight, and then a lick of pleasure that went straight down my spine. Lower. My face heated, and a twig cracked under my boot, as loud as lightning. I gritted my teeth. The ground sloped toward a gray, gushing stream, fast enough that it had to be fed by the towering, snow-blasted mountains in the distance. Good. This spot was good. An extra supply of water to drown any flames that might escape. Plenty of open space. The wind blew away from me, tugging my scent southward, deeper into the forest as I opened my mouth to tell Rhys to stay back. With that wind and the roaring stream, it was no surprise that I didn't hear them until they had surrounded me. Feyre. I whirled, arrow knocked and aimed at the source of the voice. Four spring court sentinels stalked from the trees behind me like wraiths, armed to the teeth and wide-eyed. Two, I knew, Brawn and Hart. And behind them stood Lucien. Chapter 47. If I wanted to escape, I could either face the stream or face them. But Lucien. His red hair was tied back, and there wasn't a hint of finery on him. Just armored leather, swords, knives. His metal eye roamed over me, his golden skin pale. "We've been hunting for you for over 2 months," he breathed, now scanning the woods, the stream, the sky.
Reese, Cauldron, save me. Reese was too far back, and...
How did you find me? My steady, cold voice wasn't one I recognized, but hunting for me, as if I were indeed prey. If Tamlin was here, my blood went icier than the freezing rain now sluicing down my face into my clothes.
Someone tipped us off. You'd been out here. But it was luck that we caught your scent in the wind, and...
Lucian took a step toward me. I stepped back, only 3 feet between me and the stream. Lucian's eye widened slightly.
We need to get out of here. Tamlin's been... He hasn't been himself. I'll take you right to...
No, I breathed. The word rasped through the rain, the stream, the pine forest. The four sentinels glanced between each other, then to the arrow I kept aimed. Lucian took me in again. And I could see what he was now gleaning, the Illyrian fighting leathers, the color and fullness that had returned to my face, my body, and the silent steel of my eyes.
Feyre, he said, holding out a hand, let's go home.
I didn't move. That stopped being my home the day you let him lock me up inside of it. Lucian's mouth tightened.
It was a mistake. We all make mistakes. He's sorry. More sorry than you realize, so am I.
He stepped toward me, and I backed up another few inches. Not much space remained between me and the gushing waters below. Cassian's training crashed into me, as if all the lessons he'd been drilling into me each morning were a net that caught me as I free-fell into my rising panic. Once Lucian touched me, he'd winnow us out. Not far. He wasn't that powerful, but he was fast. He'd jump miles away, then farther and farther until Reese couldn't reach me. He knew Reese was here.
Feyre, Lucian pleaded, and dared another step. His hand outraised.
My arrow angled toward him, my bowstring groaning. I'd never realized that while Lucian had been trained as a warrior, Cassian, Azrael, Mor, and Reese were warriors. Cassian could wipe Lucian off the face of the earth in a single blow.
Put the arrow down, Lucian murmured, like he was soothing a wild animal.
Behind him, the four sentinels closed in, herding me. The High Lord's pet and possession.
Don't, I breathed, touch me. You don't understand the mess we're in, Feyre. I need you home, now.
I didn't want to hear it. Peering at the stream below, I calculated my odds. The look cost me. Lucian lunged, hand out. One touch, that was all it'd take. I was not the High Lord's pet any longer. And maybe the world should learn that I did indeed have fangs. Lucian's finger grazed the sleeve of my leather jacket. And I became smoke and ash and night. The world stilled and bent. And there was Lucian, lunging so slowly for what was now blank space as I stepped around him, as I hurtled for the trees behind the sentinels. I stopped, and time resumed its natural flow. Lucian staggered, catching himself before he went over the cliff, and whirled, eye wide to discover me now standing behind his sentinels. Brawn and heart flinched and backed away. From me. And from Rhysand at my side. Lucian froze. I made my face a mirror of ice, the unfeeling twin to the cruel amusement on Rhysand's features as he picked at a fleck of lint on his dark tunic. Dark, elegant clothes. No wings, no fighting leathers. The unruffled, fine clothes? Another weapon. To hide just how skilled and powerful he was, to hide where he came from and what he loved. A weapon worth the cost of the magic he'd used to hide it, even if it put us at risk of being tracked.
Little Lucian, Rhys purred. Didn't the Lady of the Autumn Court ever tell you that when a woman says no, she means it?
Prick, Lucian snarled, storming past his sentinels but not daring to touch his weapons.
You filthy, whoring prick.
I loosed a growl. Lucian's eyes sliced to me, and he said with quiet horror,
What have you done, Feyre?
Don't come looking for me again, I said with equal softness.
He'll never stop looking for you. Never stop waiting for you to come home.
The words hit me in the gut, like they were meant to. It must have shown in my face because Lucian pressed,
What did he do to you?
Did he take your mind and—
Enough,
Rhys said, angling his head with that casual grace. Feyre and I are busy. Go back to your lands before I send your heads as a reminder to my old friend about what happens when Spring Court flunkies set foot in my territory.
The freezing rain slid down the neck of my clothes, down my back. Lucian's face was deathly pale.
You made your point, Feyre. Now come home.
I'm not a child playing games, I said through my teeth. That's how they'd seen me, in need of coddling, explaining, defending.
Careful, Lucian, Rhysand drawled, or Feyre darling will send you back in pieces, too.
We are not your enemies, Feyre, Lucian pleaded. Things got bad. Ianthe got out of hand, but it doesn't mean you give up.
You gave up, I breathed.
I felt even Rhys go still. You gave up on me, I said a bit more loudly. You were my friend, and you picked him. Picked obeying him, even when you saw what his orders and his rules did to me. Even when you saw me wasting away day by day.
You have no idea how volatile those first few months were, Lucian snapped. We needed to present a unified, obedient front, and I was supposed to be the example to which all others in our court were held.
You saw what was happening to me, but you were too afraid of him to truly do anything about it.
It was fear.
Lucian had pushed Tamlin, but to a point, he'd always yielded at the end.
I begged you, I said, the words sharp and breathless. I begged you so many times to help me, to get me out of the house, even for an hour. And you left me alone. Or shoved me into a room with Ianthe, or told me to stick it out.
Lucian said too quietly, And I suppose the Night Court is so much better? I remembered what I was supposed to know, to have experienced, what Lucian and the others could never know, not even if it meant forfeiting my own life. And I would, to keep Valaris safe, to keep Mor and Amran and Cassian and Azriel and Rhys safe. I said to Lucian, low and quiet and as vicious as the talons that formed at the tips of my fingers, as vicious as the wondrous weight between my shoulder blades. When you spend so long trapped in darkness, Lucian, you find that the darkness begins to stare back. A pulse of surprise. Of wicked delight against my mental shields, at the dark, membranous wings I knew were now poking over my shoulders. Every icy kiss of rain sent jolts of cold through me. Sensitive. So sensitive, these Illyrian wings. Lucian backed up a step.
What did you do to yourself?
I gave him a little smile. The human girl you knew died under the mountain. I have no interest in spending immortality as a High Lord's pet. Lucian started shaking his head.
Feyre,
tell Tamlin, I said, choking on his name, on the thought of what he'd done to Rhys, to his family. If he sends anyone else into these lands, I will hunt each and every one of you down. and I will demonstrate exactly what the darkness taught me. There was something like genuine pain on his face. I didn't care. I just watched him, unyielding and cold and dark. The creature I might one day have become if I had stayed at the Spring Court, if I had remained broken for decades, centuries, until I learned to quietly direct those shards of pain outward, learned to savor the pain of others. Lucian nodded to his sentinels. Brawn and Hart, wide-eyed and shaking, vanished with the other two. Lucian lingered for a moment, nothing but air and rain between us. He said softly to Rhysand, "You're dead. You and your entire cursed court." Then he was gone. I stared at the empty space where he'd been, waiting, waiting, not letting that expression off my face until a warm, strong finger traced a line down the edge of my right wing. It felt like having my ear breathed into. I shuddered, arching as a gasp came out of me. And then Rhys was in front of me, scanning my face, the wings behind me. How? Shape-shifting, I managed to say, watching the rain slide down his golden tan face. And it was distracting enough that the talons, the wings, the rippling darkness faded, and I was left light and cold in my own skin. Shape-shifting. At the sight of part of the history, the male I had not really let myself remember. Shape-shifting. A gift from Tamlin that I had not wanted or needed until now. Rhys's eyes softened. That was a very convincing performance. I gave him what he wanted to see, I murmured. We should find another spot. He nodded, and his tunic and pants vanished, replaced by those familiar fighting leathers, the wings, the sword. My warrior. Not my anything. Are you all right? He said as he scooped me into his arms to fly us to another location. I nestled into his warmth, savoring it. The fact that it was so easy, that I felt so little, upsets me more than the encounter itself. Perhaps that had been my problem all along. Why I hadn't dared take that final step at Starfall. I was guilty that I didn't feel awful, not truly, not for wanting him. A few mighty flaps had us soaring up through the trees and sailing low over the forest, rain slicing into my face. I knew things were bad, Rhysand said with quiet rage, barely audible over the freezing bite of the wind and rain. But I thought Lucian at least would have stepped in. I thought so too, I said, my voice smaller than I intended. He squeezed me gently, and I blinked at him through the rain. For once his eyes were on me, not the landscape below. You look good with wings, he said, and kissed my brow. Even the rain stopped feeling so cold. Chapter 48. Apparently, the nearby inn was a little more than a raucous tavern with a few rooms for rent, usually by the hour. And as it was, there were no vacancies, save for a tiny, tiny room in what had once been part of the attic. Rhys didn't want anyone knowing who exactly was amongst the High Fae, Fairies, Illyrians, and whoever else was packed in the inn below. Even I barely recognized him as he, without magic, without anything but adjusting his posture, muted that sense of otherworldly power until he was nothing but a common, very good-looking Illyrian warrior, pissy about having to take the last available room, so high up that there was only a narrow staircase leading to it. No hall, no other rooms. If I needed to use the bathing room, I'd have to venture to the level below, which, given the smells and sounds of the half-dozen rooms on that level, I made a point to use quickly on our way up, and then vow not to visit again until morning. A day of playing with water and fire and ice and darkness in the freezing rain had wrecked me so thoroughly that no one looked my way, not even the drunkest and loneliest of patrons in the town's tavern. The small town was barely that, a collection of an inn, an outfitter's store, supply store, and a brothel, all geared toward the hunters, warriors, and travelers passing through this part of the forest, either on their way to the Illyrian lands or out of them. Or just for the fairies who dwelled here, solitary and glad to be that way. Too small and too remote for Amarantha or her cronies to have ever bothered with. Honestly, I didn't care where we were, so long as it was dry and warm. Rhys opened the door to our attic room and stood aside to let me pass. Well, at least it was one of those things. The ceiling was so slanted that to get to the other side of the bed, I'd have to crawl across the mattress. The room so cramped, it was nearly impossible to walk around the bed to the tiny armoire shoved against the other wall. I could sit on the bed and open the armoire easily. The bed. I asked for two, Rhys said, hands already up. His breath clouded in front of him. Not even a fireplace. And not enough space to even demand he sleep on the floor. I didn't trust my mastery over flame to attempt warming the room. I'd likely burn this whole filthy place to the ground. If you can't risk using magic, then we'll have to warm each other, I said, and instantly regretted it. Body heat, I clarified. And just to wipe that look off his face, I added, my sisters and I had to share a bed. I'm used to it. I'll try to keep my hands to myself. My mouth went a bit dry. I'm hungry. He stopped smiling at that. I'll go down and get us food while you change. I lifted a brow. He said, remarkable as my own abilities are to blend in, my face is recognizable. I'd rather not be down there long enough to be noticed. Indeed, he fished a cloak from his pack and slid it on, the panels fitting over his wings, which he wouldn't risk vanishing again. He'd used power earlier in the day, small enough, he said, that it might not be noticed, but we wouldn't be returning to that part of the forest any time soon. He tugged on the hood, and I savored the shadows and menace and wings. Death on Swift Wings. That's what I'd call the painting. He said softly, I love it when you look at me like that. The purr in his voice heated my blood. Like what? Like my power isn't something to run from. Like you see me. And to a male who had grown up knowing he was the most powerful High Lord in Prithian's history, that he could shred minds if he wasn't careful, that he was alone, alone in his power, in his burden, but that fear was his mightiest weapon against the threats to his people. I'd hit home when we'd fought after the Court of Nightmares. I was afraid of you at first. His white teeth flashed in the shadows of his hood. No, you weren't. Nervous, maybe, but never afraid. I've felt the genuine terror of enough people to know the difference. Maybe that's why I couldn't keep away. When? Before I could ask, he walked downstairs, shutting the door behind him. My half-frozen clothes were a misery to peel off as they clung to my rain-swollen skin, and I knocked into the slanted ceiling, nearby walls, and slammed my knee into the brass bedpost as I changed. The room was so cold I had to get undressed in segments, replacing a freezing shirt for a dry one, pants for fleece-lined leggings, sodden socks for thick, hand-knit lovelies that went up to my calves. When I tucked myself into an oversized sweater that smelled faintly of Rhys, I sat cross-legged on the bed and waited. The bed wasn't small, but certainly not large enough for me to pretend I wouldn't be sleeping next to him, especially with the wings. The rain tinkled on the roof mere inches away, a steady beat to the thoughts that now pulsed in my head. The cauldron knew what Lucian was reporting to Tamlin, likely at this very moment, if not hours ago. I'd sent that note to Tamlin, and he'd chosen to ignore it, just as he'd ignored or rejected nearly all of my requests, acted out of his deluded sense of what he believed was right for my well-being and safety, and Lucian had been prepared to take me against my will. Fey males were territorial, dominant, arrogant, but the ones in the Spring Court, something had festered in their training. Because I knew, deep in my bones, that Cassian might push and test my limits, but the moment I said no, he'd back off. And I knew that if I had been wasting away and Rhys had done nothing to stop it, Cassian or Asriel would have pulled me out. They would have taken me somewhere, wherever I needed to be, and dealt with Rhys later. But Rhys? Rhys would never have not seen what was happening to me. Would never have been so misguided and arrogant and self-absorbed. He'd known what Ianthe was from the moment he met her. And he understood what it was like to be a prisoner, and helpless, and to struggle, every day, with the horrors of both. I had loved the High Lord who had shown me the comforts and wonders of Prithian. I had loved the High Lord who let me have the time and food and safety to paint. Maybe a small part of me might always care for him, but Amarantha had broken us both. Or broken me so that who he was and what I now was no longer fit. And I could let that go. I could accept that. Maybe it would be hard for a while, but maybe it'd get better. Rhys's feet were near silent, given away only by the slight groan of the stairs. I rose to open the door before he could knock, and found him standing there, tray in his hands. Two stacks of covered dishes sat on it, along with two glasses and a bottle of wine, and... "Tell me that stew I smell." I breathed in, stepping aside and shutting the door while he set the tray on the bed. "Right. Not even room for a table up here." "Rabbit stew, if the cook's to be believed." "I could have lived without hearing that," I said, and Rhys grinned. That smile tugged on something low in my gut, and I looked away, sitting down beside the food, careful not to jostle the tray. I opened the lid of the top dishes, two bowls of stew. "What's the other one beneath?"
"Meat pie. I didn't dare ask what kind of meat."
I shot him a glare, but he was already edging around the bed to the armoire, his pack in hand.
"Go ahead and eat," he said. "I'm changing first."
Indeed, he was soaked, and had to be freezing and sore. "You should have changed before going downstairs." I picked up the spoon and swirled the stew, sighing at the warm tendrils of steam that rose to kiss my chilled face. The rasp and slurp of wet clothes being shucked off filled the room. I tried not to think about that bare golden chest, the tattoos, the hard muscles.
"You were the one training all day. Getting you a hot meal was the least I could do."
I took a sip. Bland, but edible, and most importantly, hot. I ate in silence, listening to the rustle of his clothes being donned, trying to think of ice baths, of infected wounds, of toe fungus, anything but his naked body so close, and the bed I was sitting on. I poured myself a glass of wine, then filled his. At last, Rhys squeezed between the bed and jutting corner of the wall, his wings tucked in close. He wore loose, thin pants and a tight-fitting shirt of what looked to be soft as cotton. "How do you get it over the wings?" I asked while he dug into his own stew.
The back is made of slats that close with hidden buttons. But in normal circumstances, I just use magic to seal it shut.
It seems like you have a great deal of magic constantly at use at once.
A shrug. It helps me work off the strain of my power. The magic needs release, draining, or else it'll build up and drive me insane. That's why we call the Illyrian stones siphons. They help them channel the power, empty it when necessary.
Actually insane? I set aside the empty stew bowl and removed the lid from the meat pie.
Actually insane. Or so I was warned. I can feel it, though. The pull of it if I go too long without releasing it.
That's horrible.
Another shrug. Everything has its cost, Vera. If the price of being strong enough to shield my people is that I have to struggle with that same power, then I don't mind. Amryn taught me enough about controlling it. Enough that I owe a great deal to her, including the current shield around my city while we're here.
Everyone around him had some use, some mighty skill. And yet there I was, nothing more than a strange hybrid. More trouble than I was worth.
You're not, he said.
Don't read my thoughts.
I can't help what you sometimes shout down the bond. And besides, everything is usually written on your face if you know where to look, which made your performance today so much more impressive.
He set aside his stew just as I finished devouring my meat pie, and I slid back on the bed to the pillows, cupping my glass of wine between my chilled hands. I watched him eat while I drank.
Did you think I would go with him?
He paused mid-bite, then lowered his fork.
I heard every word between you. I knew you could take care of yourself, and yet...
He went back to his pie, swallowing a bite before continuing.
And yet I found myself deciding that if you took his hand, I would find a way to live with it. It would be your choice.
I sipped from my wine. And if he had grabbed me? There was nothing but uncompromising will in his eyes.
Then I would have torn apart the world to get you back.
A shiver went down my spine, and I couldn't look away from him. I would have fired at him, I breathed, if he had tried to hurt you. I hadn't even admitted that to myself. His eyes flickered.
I know.
He finished eating, placed the empty tray in the corner, and faced me on the bed, refilling my glass before tending to his. He was so tall he had to stoop to keep from hitting his head on the slanted ceiling. One thought in exchange for another, I said. No training involved, please. A chuckle rasped out of him, and he drained his glass, setting it on the tray. He watched me take a long drink from mine.
I'm thinking, he said, following the flick of my tongue over my bottom lip, that I look at you and feel like I'm dying, like I can't breathe. I'm thinking that I want you so badly I can't concentrate half the time I'm around you, and this room is too small for me to properly bed you, especially with the wings.
My heart stumbled a beat. I didn't know what to do with my arms, my legs, my face. I gulped down the rest of my wine and discarded the glass beside the bed, steeling my spine as I said, I'm thinking that I can't stop thinking about you. And that it's been that way for a long while, even before I left the Spring Court. And maybe that makes me a traitorous, lying piece of trash, but...
It doesn't, he said, his face solemn.
But it did. I'd wanted to see Rhys and during those weeks between visits, and hadn't cared when Tamlin stopped visiting my bedroom. Tamlin had given up on me, but I'd also given up on him, and I was a lying piece of trash for it. I murmured, we should go to sleep. The patter of the rain was the only sound for a long moment before he said, "All right." I crawled over the bed to the side tucked almost against the slanted ceiling and shimmied beneath the quilt. Cool, crisp sheets wrapped around me like an icy hand. But my shiver was from something else entirely as the mattress shifted, the blanket moved, and then the two candles beside the bed went out. Darkness hit me at the same moment the warmth from his body did. It was an effort not to nudge toward it. Neither one of us moved, though. I stared into the dark, listening to that icy rain, trying to steal the warmth from him.
"You're shivering so hard the bed is shaking," he said.
"My hair is wet," I said. It wasn't a lie. Reese was silent, then the mattress groaned, sinking directly behind me as his warmth poured over me.
"No expectations," he said. "Just body heat."
I scowled at the laughter in his voice. But his broad hands slid under and over me, one flattening against my stomach and tugging me against the hard warmth of him, the other sliding under my ribs and arms to band around my chest, pressing his front into me. He tangled his legs with mine, and then a heavier, warmer darkness settled over us, smelling of citrus and the sea. I lifted a hand toward that darkness and met with a soft, silky material, his wing, cocooning and warming me. I traced my finger along it, and he shuddered, his arms tightening around me.
"Your finger is very cold," he gritted out, the words hot on my neck.
I tried not to smile, even as I tilted my neck a bit more, hoping the heat of his breath might caress it again. I dragged my finger along his wing, the nail scraping gently against the smooth surface. Reese tensed, his hand splaying across my stomach.
"You cruel, wicked thing," he purred,
his nose grazing the exposed bit of neck I'd arched beneath him.
"Didn't anyone ever teach you manners?"
"I never knew Illyrians were such sensitive babies," I said, sliding another finger down the inside of his wing. Something hard pushed against my behind. Heat flooded me, and I went taut and loose all at once. I stroked his wing again, two fingers now, and he twitched against my backside in time with the caress. The fingers he'd spread over my stomach began to make idle, lazy strokes. He swirled one around my navel, and I inched imperceptibly closer, grinding up against him, arching a bit more to give that other hand access to my breasts.
"Greedy," he murmured, his lips hovering over my neck. "First you terrorize me with your cold hands, now you want... What is it you want, Feyre?"
"More, more, more," I almost begged him, as his fingers traveled down the slope of my breasts, while his other hand continued its idle stroking along my stomach, my abdomen, slowly, so slowly heading toward the low band of my pants and the building ache beneath it. Rhysand's teeth scraped against my neck in a lazy caress.
"What is it you want, Feyre?"
He nipped at my earlobe. I cried out just a little, arching fully against him, as if I could get that hand to slip exactly to where I wanted it. I knew what he wanted me to say. I wouldn't give him the satisfaction of it, not yet. So I said, "I want a distraction." It was breathless. "I want fun." His body again tensed behind mine. And I wondered if he somehow didn't see it for the lie it was. If he thought that was all I indeed wanted. But his hands resumed their roaming.
"Then allow me the pleasure of distracting you."
He slipped a hand beneath the top of my sweater, diving clean under my shirt. Skin to skin, the calluses of his hands made me groan as they scraped the top of my breast and circled around my peaked nipple. "I love these," he breathed onto my neck, his hand sliding to my other breast. "You have no idea how much I love these." I groaned as he caressed a knuckle against my nipple, and I bowed into the touch, silently begging him. He was hard as granite behind me, and I ground against him, eliciting a soft, wicked hiss from him. "Stop that," he snarled onto my skin. "You'll ruin my fun." I would do no such thing. I began twisting, reaching for him, needing to just feel him, but he clicked his tongue and pushed himself harder against me, until there was no room for my hand to even slide in. "I want to touch you first," he said, his voice so guttural I barely recognized it. "Just let me touch you." He palmed my breast for emphasis. It was enough of a broken plea that I paused, yielding as his other hand again trailed lazy lines on my stomach. "I can't breathe when I look at you. Let me touch you. Because I was jealous and pissed off, she's mine." I shut out the thoughts, the bits and pieces he'd given me. Reese slid his finger along the band of my pants again, a cat playing with its dinner. Again. Again. "Please," I managed to say. He smiled against my neck. "There are those missing manners." His hand at last trailed beneath my pants. The first brush of him against me dragged a groan from deep in my throat. He snarled in satisfaction at the wetness he found waiting for him, and his thumb circled that spot at the apex of my thighs, teasing, brushing up against it, but never quite. His other hand gently squeezed my breast at the same moment his thumb pushed down exactly where I wanted. I bucked my hips, my head fully back against his shoulder now, panting as his thumb flicked. I cried out, and he laughed. Low and soft. "Like that?" A moan was my only reply. "More, more, more." His fingers slid down, slow and brazen, straight through the core of me, and every point in my body, my mind, my soul narrowed to the feeling of his finger poised there, like he had all the time in the world. "Bastard." "Please," I said again, and ground my ass against him for emphasis. He hissed at the contact and slid a finger inside me. He swore, "Farah." But I'd already started to move on him, and he swore again in a long exhale. His lips pressed into my neck, kissing up, up toward my ear. I let out a moan so loud it drowned out the rain as he slid in a second finger, filling me so much I couldn't think around it, couldn't breathe. "That's it," he murmured, his lips tracing my ear. I was sick of my neck and ear getting such attention. I twisted as much as I could and found him staring at me, at the hand down the front of my pants, watching me move on him. He was still staring at me when I captured his mouth with my own, biting on his lower lip. Reese groaned, plunging his fingers in deeper, harder. I didn't care. I didn't care one bit about what I was and who I was and where I'd been as I yielded fully to him, opening my mouth. His tongue swept in, moving in a way that I knew exactly what he'd do if he got between my legs. His fingers plunged in and out, slow and hard, and my very existence narrowed to the feel of them, to the tightness in me ratcheting up with every deep stroke, every echoing thrust of his tongue in my mouth. "You have no idea how much I..." He cut himself off and groaned again. "Farah." The sound of my name on his lips was my undoing. Release barreled down my spine and I cried out, only to have his lips cover mine as if he could devour the sound. His tongue flicked the roof of my mouth while I shuddered around him, clenching tight. He swore again, breathing hard, fingers stroking me through the last throes of it, until I was limp and trembling in his arms. I couldn't breathe hard enough, fast enough, as Rhys withdrew his fingers, pulling back so I could meet his stare. He said,
I wanted to do that when I felt how drenched you were at the Court of Nightmares. I wanted to have you right there in the middle of everyone. But mostly, I just wanted to do this.
His eyes held mine as he brought those fingers to his mouth and sucked on them, on the taste of me. I was going to eat him alive. I slid a hand up to his chest to pin him down, but he gripped my wrist.
When you lick me, he said roughly, I want to be alone, far away from everyone. Because when you lick me, Farah, he said, pressing nipping kisses to my jaw, my neck, I'm going to let myself roar loud enough to bring down a mountain.
I was instantly liquid again, and he laughed under his breath.
And when I lick you, he said,
sliding his arms around me and tucking me in tight to him, I want you splayed out on the table like my own personal feast. I whimpered.
I've had a long, long time to think about how and where I want you.
He sat onto the skin of my neck, his fingers sliding under the band of my pants, but stopping just beneath. They're home for the evening.
I have no intention of doing it all in one night, or in a room where I can't even fuck you against the wall.
I shuddered. He remained long and hard against me. I had to feel him, had to get that considerable length inside of me.
Sleep. He said.
He might as well have commanded me to breathe underwater. But he began stroking my body again, not to arouse, but to soothe. Long, luxurious strokes down my stomach, my sides. Sleep found me faster than I'd thought. And maybe it was the wine, or the aftermath of the pleasure he'd wrung from me. But I didn't have a single nightmare. Chapter 49. I awoke, warm and rested and calm. Safe. Sunlight streamed through the filthy window, illuminating the reds and golds in the wall of wing before me, where it had been all night, shielding me from the cold. Rhysand's arms were banded around me, his breathing deep and even, and I knew it was just as rare for him to sleep that soundly, peacefully. What we'd done last night. Carefully, I twisted to face him, his arms tightening slightly, as if to keep me from vanishing with the morning mist. His eyes were open when I nestled my head against his arm. Within the shelter of his wing, we watched each other. And I realized I might very well be content to do exactly that forever. I said quietly, "Why did you make that bargain with me? Why demand a week from me every month?" His violet eyes shuddered. And I didn't dare admit what I expected, but it was not...
Because I wanted to make a statement to Amarantha. Because I wanted to piss off Tamlin. And I needed to keep you alive in a way that wouldn't be seen as merciful.
Oh. His mouth tightened.
You know there is nothing I wouldn't do for my people, for my family.
And I'd been a pawn in that game. His wing folded back, and I blinked at the watery light.
Bath or no bath, he said.
I cringed at the memory of the grimy, reeking bathing room a level below. Using it to see to my needs would be bad enough. I'd rather bathe in a stream, I said, pushing past the sinking in my gut.